You're listening to Drum Weekly. I'm your host, Pam Magwaza, and welcome to today's episode. She's one of the most respected authors in the country, and an expert on truly South African thrillers and the inner workings of the life of a blessed girl. If you're a fan, you already know that I'm talking about best-selling author Angela Makholwa. Her latest novel, Critical But Stable, has all the ingredients of an Angela Makholwa classic. Suspense, murder mystery, money, complicated love, and sexual misadventures. It tells the lives of ultra-rich couples and the cost that comes with their seemingly perfect lives. I had a chance to sit with Angela, or rather, hop on a Zoom, as we do these days, to talk about her new novel. And this is what she had to say.
But I wanted to focus on the topic of marriage, especially long-term marriage or long-term relationships. That's where the inspiration came from. And I suppose it's because I've been married for some time now, and I'm surrounded by a lot of married couples. And it just interests me how, as society, a lot of people look to married couples as kind of the litmus test for what it takes to have long-lasting relationships. But there's a lot that goes on that we don't want to talk about, because once you're in that long-term relationship, it's secret, of course. You want to protect it. You want to preserve it. You want it to look good to others. So I was just interested in exploring some of those themes and some of the things that actually make marriages and the things that break marriages at the same time. So that's where that came from.
And I mean, the very thing that makes a marriage could be the very thing that breaks it. In Angela's own words, no one ever tells you the cost of a perfect life. And the couples in her book, the Gias, the Manamelas, the Msibis, from the outside seem to have just that.
The Gias, your favorite couple. It looks like there are a lot of people's favorite couple, rather. So Solomzi is the husband to Mushidi. Mushidi is ambitious. She's hardworking. Mm-hmm. She's got her eye on the prize. And for her, the prize is, holiday homes, beautiful house in the right neighborhood, private schools for her kids, all of that. Mm-hmm. she wants it all. And Solomzi is right there with her. He believes in the same vision, or so she thinks that they share the same vision. Until they get to a point in their lives where she starts realizing that they're sinking further and further into debt. And when she tries to confront her husband about the source of this debt, because she can't figure out why they're owing so much money all of a sudden and they can't pay their overheads all of a sudden, Solomzi just keeps evading the issue, which happens a lot. The issue of money is one of the big deal breakers in a lot of marriages, because you've got to be honest about finances and things like that.
I think it's very interesting that you say that. I think your book really explores the relationship between long-term relationships and marriage and money, and how it breaks people.
I
think even with
think about, we don't like to factor finance into relationship deal breakers, because it seems as if you're being shallow, or you're basing the relationship on financial issues. But the truth is that you can't run away from finances, because you're building a life with this person. And so it is important to, like, honesty is essential.
So out of need, fear of losing it all, and love, can those coexist together? Angela admits that she's not much of a romance writer, and her books are often filled with thrilling realism. I mean, Critical But Stable literally starts with a man looking over a married woman's dead body and wondering how he's going to get himself out of whatever crime he's just committed. So it's not your typical love novel. But the question it does ask is this: can true love and desire coexist with extreme wealth, or is it replaced by convenience and fear of losing it all if you leave the person you're with? So I think even that's what I wanted to ask.
Questions you're asking. Look, I think if you look at the Duke and Norma, I mean, they've got a very strange relationship. They very gangster, both of them, if you think about it, because of, you know, their grounding, like where they both come from, their background. So it's the most, in a way, it's the most passionate of the relationships. Passionate in the worst way possible and the best way possible.
It's a very Mr. and Mrs. Smith type of situation.
Yes. So when they're in their love mode, it's really, you know, it's fireworks. It's, you know, the roof is on fire when they're cuddly and loving. But when they are at each other's throats, the daggers are out, the claws are out, so they're like biting and scratching and screaming. So in a funny way, they are the most passionate, like that, they are the most passionate couple in both a good way and a bad way. And so if you're looking for passion, Shem, sorry, that's the best I could do for you. That is the best I could do under the circumstances. I mean, Soli and Mushidi, you know, I mean, they're the most, I suppose they because of this debt thing, it's just like it's a gulf between them that is making, and also obviously Soli is just hard to pin down. Like he's always going somewhere, running somewhere, meeting some people. And the thing is, those things happen. I mean, I can't even make excuses for it, because there are couples like that, there are relationships like that. And as much as I would have loved, one day when I grow up, I will love to write a real love story. But because I'm this person that I am, who wants to torture my reader, unfortunately, I wanted to just also delve on the good and the bad and the ugly, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the best love stories always have tragedy. So I suppose in that way, the tragedy within these marriages is perfect. So in a way, Angelaide is a love story in its essence.
A twisted love story. Like a romantic, mushy, happy love story. The best I can love story, that's it.
Funny enough, speaking of Solomzi and Mushidi, they actually find some sort of rekindling once they downgrade their lifestyle, once they're like at the core of who they are and going to McDonald's for lunch. So in that way, I suppose they did find true love outside of the money, outside of, you know, the crazy holiday
home. Also, I mean, it's not a final thing. You say, you can sense that, you know, these people, they know that they lost each other along the way, you know, in that 10-year marriage, that they really, really did lose each other. And that it took something very drastic. I mean, it took two very drastic and very tragic and very disturbing events to push them to try and find their way back to each other. And I think that happens a lot as well, that once you get lost in chasing the bling and chasing, you know, that perfect life, then you lose track of your partner. You lose track of the things that actually brought you together in the first place. And so they kind of get to a point where they realize that they really need to just scale down and see each other, like really, really see the other person, not look at, you know, are we at the best restaurant? Is it Michelin starred? Is it, you know, the decor? Is it at the right venue? Let's just be at a McDonald's so I can see you. I can have a conversation with you instead of having a conversation about, oh, how this is the best food and the best, you know, everything. So it's just kind of a simple way of saying that, you know, I suppose in marriage, sometimes the way back to each other is really going back to the basics.
After the break, Angela tells us about her exploration of sexuality, religion, and how that intersects with marriage and the idea of monogamy.
Did you know Drum Magazine is now fully digital? Yes, our content is now at the touch of your fingertips. Simply download the News24 app, register to create your profile, click on Discover, and choose the Drum logo to read our content. Alternatively, visit drum.co.za. See you soon.
And just a complete contrast to Solomzi and Mushidi's marriage is Lerato and Mzwandile. I love that you, I love that you touched on asexuality.
I'm getting so much back about Lerato and Mzwandile's situation, but yes, continue.
I loved it, and I love that you didn't focus too much on his sexual orientation, but his dishonesty about it. And hiding behind religion. Why did you choose to tell their story that way?
Look, I think sexual orientation is something that we need to respect as society. And I think especially, I don't want to give away too much in this interview, so I don't want to talk about what his sexual orientation is.
Yeah.
But I think, because I think the reason that people get into relationships and commit to people that they've no business maybe committing to, or even if they have the business, even if they do love the person, but because of the stigma that we attach to sexualities, types of sexualities that we don't understand, people tend to use deception to try and either fit in with society so that they look like they are all partnered up and it's good and it's fine, or even if they do love the person and maybe there's something big that about them that's different to the way that we're used to loving, they choose to be deceptive about it because they're scared of being stigmatized or being rejected. So I didn't want to focus on, because people are like, no, we needed to know more because this thing is kind of different, we're not used to it. And I said, you know, already because of his reaction, that kind of vilifies him as a character, right? Because he uses religion to hide behind, you know, why he can't be the kind of sexual partner that his wife expects him to be. So already I've kind of cast him in this negative light, but we know that these things happen, that people use either religion or a patriarchy or whatever it is to mask inadequacies that make them not be the partner that, you know, the other person expects them to be, you know. So I didn't want his sexuality to be like this big bad thing, like how could he's like this and that's why he's like he's not being as intimate as the partner would expect him to be, right? So yeah, that is the reason. And I'm saying whether a person is bisexual or gay or asexual or whatever it is, if we are honest as society and we allow people to be what they are, then there's no, you know, there'll be less need for people to marry people that they're not even attracted to or that they don't even prefer, you know?
I think in situations like this, I think you open up conversation about, can you think of love and marriage outside of monogamy when something like this happens? So I think that's a really good conversation starter about what marriage is. Does it mean that you have sex with the same person for the rest of your life or have no sex because the person doesn't desire you in that way? And how can that be fixed? Or how can you work through that as a couple? So I thought that was really interesting. But I'd really love to circle back, if you don't mind, to just the money aspect, because I mean, that was huge for me. I'm like, oh, wow, this is how rich people live. Okay, we didn't know. But so I loved how you were able to portray Black people's relationship to money. And in a way, I know Critical But Stable is about marriage, but I also found it to be about Black wealth. Is it always in a critical but stable condition? Because it almost seemed like, you know, the Gias were afraid of losing it all. The Manamelas were were willing to do anything to keep the wealth that they worked so hard for, almost as if it was fragile in a way. Is that what you intended to speak about when you explored the money aspect of this?
Look, I mean, if you look at our history, South African black people do have a very kind of idiosyncratic relationship with money because of the fact that we never, for one thing, most of us never thought that we'd have access to like real money, like money that looks like wealth almost, or is wealth depending on the eye of the beholder, right? And so there is a very it's a trick, like, for want of a better word, it's a tricky relationship that we have with money, because pre-1994 we didn't really aspire to the kind of wealth that some people are able to enjoy right now. And so the attachment is much more, it's intense because of that, because of how and when, and the fact that generationally we don't have a yardstick to kind of measure how we're supposed to keep the wealth, how we're supposed to engage with it, how we're supposed to enjoy it. Are we supposed to flaunt it? Are we supposed to let other people know on Instagram that we've arrived? Are we supposed to keep quiet about it? You know, it's kind of, and I'm sorry to say this, it is a new thing, because a lot of the wealth that we see, the major kind of wealth that is enjoyed by these characters is new money. A lot of wealthy people, wealthy black people right now, are new money.
Yeah.
It's very few families who come from that kind of background because of apartheid and all those socioeconomic inequalities that we've endured as a people in this country, you know. Mm-hmm. What I fear attaching black wealth to shadiness, because not every wealthy black person, even if they post on Instagram or whatever social media platform, it does not mean that is ill-gotten wealth, right? Mm-hmm. So the danger in always frowning upon people flexing about their wealth is that we are saying the underlying assumption is, you probably stole a tender, you probably stole money from somebody, it's corrupt, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I tried to, I mean, I think there's one couple that's definitely shady wealth. But with the other couples, you know, the Gias, I mean, you know, it's people who just want, and don't know when to stop and say we've got enough, or don't know when to stop and say, hey, maybe we can't afford this anymore, maybe let's scale down. So it's not necessarily that theirs is ill-gotten wealth. It's just those people who just want to flex all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Lerato and her husband, they're just working in corporate. They're comfortable with what they have. They're not trying to keep up with the Joneses necessarily, or the Kumalos necessarily. They're just going on about their lives. So I wanted to also kind of reflect on those different kind of dynamics. They're a successful couple, but they don't need to flex, you know what I mean? Like, because money is not everything to them. So I think it's important, even as writers, as artists, when we depict black wealth, I think it's important to just be mindful of the kind of message that we're trying to bring across about black people with money. The book is available at most good bookstores, and it's a great summer read. So if you don't have it already, please get yourself a copy of Critical but Stable.
This podcast was hosted by me, Pam Magwaza. Our executive producer is Charlene Rose. Production support was by Adu Tombendeni. Our theme music is by Getty Music. And you can find more of our stories on drum.co.za. See you soon!